cook. So he's like, deliveries coming in every day. And you know, the food delivery guys, they're not going to spend time sort of trying to figure out which bell it is. So they ring all the bells. And every time it's like, oh my goodness, it's like always like lunchtime when the bell rings. And it is, super annoying. But it's, what can you do? You know, this is the COVID lifestyle. So anyway, welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 101, bringing it to you every Friday. Always excited to be with everyone here. Thank you again for all of your support. It has been an amazing journey so far. So before we kick off today's episode, we can already see through the chat stream going crazy. It's going to be like super exciting. Goodness me, that was a bit of excitement right there. You're going to sneeze, Adam. That's how you do it. Let's give it a big blowout. Although these days, I wonder how that will be. People will deal with this type of sneezing in the post-COVID world. You know, back in the day, it was quite funny, and now I think people are going to be fleeing if they see you do it. All right, quick sound check, everybody. As usual, for the people on Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, please say hello. That would be good. Actually, Kim's just said bless you, so we know she can hear you. We should be broadcasting live on places like LinkedIn and also on Facebook Live. So if you can hear me in those two places, can you please give me some sign that you can hear me okay? Like, dislike, doesn't matter what it is. Just show me that you can see me okay, and I'll hopefully be able to do something about it. I've learned something on this app, by the way. It's possible for me to fix certain problems on the fly. Because there was one crisis where I didn't get onto LinkedIn Live at the time. I thought, oh, you can actually push a button and make it happen. So anyway, if you can hear me okay, let me know. Okay, one more thing. I think that's about right. Getting on with the show, a quick thank you to our sponsors this week. Our sponsors this week are a company called Occupop. If you haven't heard of Occupop, you should. They're a really exciting business coming out of Ireland. Lots of interesting HR tech and recruiting tech coming out of Ireland over the last couple of years, it seems. So exciting to see new territories emerge with these innovations. Occupop are basically ATS and candidate management systems. So if you're still struggling with Google Sheets, Excel or whatever, and you need to upgrade, you probably need your first like proper bit of kit. In which case, Occupop is offering a free 14-day trial. So no excuses if you're still battering away trying to hire, sort of organize your recruiting on a spreadsheet. You really need to upgrade. 14-day trial, link just shared right there. Okay, moving on. Welcome to Adam Gordon, of course. I'm pleased that you're back, Adam. And it looks like you got a bit of a run, actually. It's like a couple of weeks on the trot where Adam Gordon's going to be in the hot seat. So this is going to be back to rhythm, man. Back to rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a couple of weeks off and I just come back and don't know what I'm doing. It's like I've never done it in the first place.
Mate, it's not like I know what I'm doing. You know, it's like I've got away with it thus far by proclaiming ignorance, but it's actually true. Like, I'm just like pressing buttons as best I can and hope it works. It's like at some point I'm going to get professional. Nowhere near it yet. Okay, Adam, let's talk about the newsletter. Did you read it last week? And if so, what was interesting, man?
So, like, I promise you, one week I am going to say to you, I don't read it anymore. I'm not that interested, to be honest.
Quite possibly, mate. Quite possibly. It does get jaded over time.
It was difficult. It's difficult for me to choose. All the things to focus on this week because I was quite interested in a lot of it. You know, normally I pick out the same sorts of things. I'm really sorry, but they're often marketing and sourcing related. Mm. I am really interested in, okay, the things I was really interested in this week. The first was I am really interested in the concept of non-fungible tokens,
yes,
NFTs, and I really enjoyed the blog, which explains how artists can go and make use of NFTs as a living. So an NFT is basically a unit on a digital ledger, like a blockchain, that they can exchange for different things. Each one is unique. It's completely designed by the individual. And people are making quite a lot of money by them today. So
quite a lot of money. How about $69 million? The most expensive digital piece of art. And bear in mind, this is literally just a JPEG, folks. So think about this. It's just a JPEG, which prior to the existence of NFTs, you would have not priced that at anything. Like, when's the last time you paid for a JPEG, folks? And this guy basically sold it for $69 million. Which is a ridiculous amount. Now, I think this is super interesting. It's a very new way to think about value, very new way to think about getting your return to value from the effort you put in. Think about all the wages we're earning, folks. Our return in terms of wages is exchanged for our time and effort, right? But it's kind of the interface is the company manages the payroll in order to give us that value back. And obviously there's lots of middlemen, there's a market in between the company as well, and there's all kinds of things that then siphon off bits of it, so that by the time we get our salary, guess what, it's like mega diluted, it's cut. If you want to use street terms. Whereas NFTs, you can just go straight to an open marketplace and it's open bid, and some business bid $69 million for this piece of digital art, which is amazing. By the way, folks, if you are super interested in this, today I saw the first job ad on that is a non-fungible token, and it's been produced by, typically being produced by a guy called David Arnault, who is a CEO of Growth Tribe. I think you know him, Adam.
Yeah, I do.
They're a very clever growth hacking, growth marketing business. Of course, he needed to do first on this. But I think it's fascinating to see it moving into recruiting, because it inevitably will do. So we're going to do a little bit more on NFTs and blockchain in the future. Hopefully, we'll do a Brainfood Live on that in due course. Cool. What else, man?
Let's change gear a little bit and focus on sourcing. How do we find people and things on the internet? And if you think you know it all, then I challenge you to follow Irina Shamaeva and not learn new things. So I think I'm pretty good on it, and I always learn new things from her. So the blog around how to Google for partial words in URLs, so like the word an abbreviation of developer might be dev, for example. You can't search for that in Google, but you can search for partial words within URLs, and the blog explains how to go about doing this. Totally practical. One of the great things about Irina is she tells you pretty much everything she knows, and what you pay for is the practical applications, and let's embed it into the real life for you. If you want to train yourself, go and follow Irina.
Dude, I mean, I just think it's, if you are a sourcer, like literally if your job is to go and find people for jobs, you need to know this person, you need to connect with her on LinkedIn, you absolutely need to read her blog, Boolean Strings, because basically she just amazes me every time she posts something. It's always like ridiculously simple. It's always like, do it today. I love Irina because she's literally teaching you stuff that I could do. So, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't need to figure out how to do, website or do this or whatever. It's literally, okay, here's step 1, 2, 3 and out come these results. Really amazing. And she does like a training course as well. I think that's how she makes her money. I would say totally go and like spend some money on that. If you have a team that you want to upgrade your sort of direct sourcing capacity, get that team some exposure to this person, because this will be a very significant when the history of sourcing is written. Irina Shamaeva will have a chapter in that. There's no doubt about it. She's awesome.
Okay. It was the newsletter was, there was a lot of different subjects covered. I always really enjoy the ones that are transparency around, I went for an interview and this is what it was, I went through a recruitment process and this is what it was like, or this is how we are changing the way we go about paying our people and, rewarding our people and things like that. So there's two that I want to focus on. One is, I don't remember the name of the guy, but he's written a blog about the recruitment process at Automattic, which is the company behind WordPress. There's a couple of things that really stood out for me. The first was the way the application phase was actually really simple. Just three questions. Tell us about an interesting project that you've worked on. How do you use our products? Automatic, I think it said that it's the company behind WordPress. How do you use our products? And then the third one was, what questions have you got for us? I mean, that's just brilliant. It's so simple. A real great way to stand out. I imagine the assessment process is going to be quite challenging because there's a lot of potential bias that you're going to put here. Humans are going to have to evaluate these because they're all quite subjective. But I really enjoyed that. And then the second thing I really enjoyed, and I have actually just been doing it myself, is inviting potential candidates to come and join your in-house Slack and joining some of the channels where you can mix with people who work at the company. And I think that is just an excellent way. I've said this for a long time. Companies are pretty transparent now in the age of Glassdoor. Just own this and take it further and open up your doors and windows and just show exactly what it's like. So we don't bring in my company, we don't invite potential candidates into our Slack channels, but after they've said they're coming to join us, before they actually do join us, in that danger period where they may not actually end up coming and joining the company, yeah, we invite them to come and join certainly the general channel, the random channel, and channels that are to do with the things that they'll be involved with so they can meet the team. And you know, come and join meetings if they've got time at their, you know, their lunch times or whatever before they start. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that article, and I think companies need to make themselves more transparent.
The on that note, it's almost like you might as well because the stuff that is not, so long as it's not, you share not super confidential information, what candidates are really looking for is just to get familiar with the terminology, you know, how people talk in that business, who is talking. These are all positive things, and we've seen some consistent patterns actually where the earlier you allow that person in, the more comfortable they're going to be, higher uptick in terms of the candidate experience, shorter runway in terms of ramping up the productivity. You know, every new person that you're hiring, their primary concern is, look, I want to be productive day one. I want to be ready to go. I don't want to be that dude who doesn't know where the pencils are, that kind of thing. So essentially opening up your communication channels prior to, I mean, in your case, Adam, it's like prior to start. Some other companies, even further, it's like, look, we're going to open it up for company, for candidates also. Obviously, walled garden internally can't be everything, but there's going to be, like, let's say, a specific channel on Slack where, yeah, it's open. So in other words, the existing employees know that whatever goes in here is, may as well be on the street, may as well be open, but it's there in case people want to wander in and have a chit chat. Why not? And you know, that could be a very powerful EB thing, a very good candidate experience, and it also creates, I think, a lot of opportunities for trust to build, right? You know, there's a huge trust issue when you're hiring new people. The candidate also has a trust issue. They're entering a new family, so to speak. So having this space to have this conversation at the candidate's own sort of pace, yeah, is perfect. Okay, cool, man. What else? One more, mate.
Well, just linked to that was Jessica Hayes, who is, I think, head of talent at Whereby.
Yep.
She's written a three-part blog series on how they pay people at Whereby.
Yes.
And the decisions that they've made around, you know, what kind of compensation for different types of people and how it works. I mean, talk about, like, the ultimate form of transparency, how you're going to get paid and why and the methodologies behind it and all that kind of thing. So again, very similar to the article about the interview process at Automatic is, if you're going to go and work at Whereby, here's how you're going to get paid. Love it. Yep. Great idea.
Not only was that transparent, Jess, hello, I know you're watching this somewhere. Actually, that's a bit arrogant, isn't it? She's got better things to do than watch Brain Food Live. But she might be. Anyway, what I love about this is the transparency is actually like while she's working it through. So it was literally being open with the process. It's not open with the results. It's not saying, oh, here's our compensation plan, we've already done it, there you go. That's already, like, gives you a brownie point because you're being open with your comp plan. But she was open with her working through the plan. That's why it's a three-part series. If you track back episode two and episode one, all three, by the way, have been promoted in Brainfuel because I love this idea, is just literally her thinking, all right, we'll probably have to do it this way then. And that approach, I think, just creates, again, much more trust. It's called, there's a management technique. It's called working with your garage door up. So this is a US thing. But the idea is that you should fix your car in public. So people can come and look at it. It's like you're not hiding it. There's no reason to just, you know, to disguise this. Allow people to see what you're doing. You don't have to make it perfect. You might even get some good advice from the passerby saying, hey, you need to use that wrench instead of that wrench or whatever it is. It's only plus points. So great example. And also a really important issue, like another issue, the topic itself of how do you do global compensation in a work from anywhere world, also a big deal. Okay, let's move on to the topic at hand, folks. So the topic at hand is how do you manage recruitment when you're overwhelmed with job applicants? We've already seen a bunch of people in the chat stream saying, I'm always overloaded with job applicants. We had a good conversation on the Facebook group about this. And again, certain people are just regularly inundated, particularly some of our friends in India, for instance. And I think Saurav is over there as well. I might bring him on screen. Like, this is the situation. You have too many candidates for that situation for almost any job. You're going to get 100, 200, 500, 1,000 applications per role. How do you deal with that? So before we bring our guests on, I want to just speak to you, Adam, on this. Do you have any experience, any thoughts, any like observations? Like, what do you need to do when, you know, you're going to get smacked with an advert response that you can't handle?
Well, yeah, I do have some thoughts about it. And it actually links really closely to what we covered last week around, you know, how to let people down properly and that kind of thing. And I come back to what Jacob described as flip the script. So my personal belief is you make use of technologies like chatbots and other automation workflows to make sure that people are being asked a series of questions and use a decision tree, which takes the 10,000 people who are interested down to by the recruiter actually gets the CVs. It's the 30 people that have come right through that workflow. That's what I recommend, but I'm conscious that's maybe oversimplifying it, and I'm really looking forward to finding out what our guests think.
Not at all. I ran a quick poll on LinkedIn on this, and I called it online form with knockout questions, what I described it. Yeah. And that was actually the most popular technique control applicant flow. So Saurav, you mentioned you have a fresher role for, you had 1,000 applications. That's ridiculous. 3,450, 4,000 plus unread emails. That's why, you know, it may be very difficult for you to post in those places where you can't control the flow, or at least you should have a space that protects your inbox. So you need something in between the advert and the inbox, whatever it is. You need some sort of thing that filters. Otherwise, you're just like opening your mouth to a fire hose. You're going to get drowned. Okay, let's...
I used the term last week, experience design. And that's, again, it's all about experience design. It's about put yourself in the shoes of the potential candidate. And what kind of process is going to be acceptable for you where you don't get a response from an actual human, but you do know what's happening with it?
Yeah.
Once you've got that nailed, you can have as many people applying as possible. But of course, I'm going to say the other thing is that all of those people who apply and they're not suitable for that job, are they suitable for another job? And can you bring them into a pipeline and give them a really great experience, even though they're not going to get move forward with this particular job? So, the three guests joining today will all have great perspectives on this. So
let's bring those guests on. We've got Ben Gledhill. You know what? I've just tried to find Jerome Kuppelman and he's not there. I wonder whether I've sent him off to the wrong place, which is not unusual for me. So I do apologize, Jerome. But if you do know Jerome Kuppelman's at Road Trip, tell him to get onto this crowdcast because he's a guest.
Yelma?
Is it Yelma?
Yes, he's there. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I got his name wrong. That's why.
Sorry. Yeah, there's a Yelmer and a Yelmer at Road Trip. It. Road Trip's two Yelmers.
That's it. There are too many Yelmers in there. Confuse me. But anyway, we're going to go with five people on screen. I hope that's going to be okay. We've got Ben Gledhill there. Ben, how are you doing? Good to see you, sir.
Yeah, good, Paul. How are you? Right, Abs.
Very good. Ben, can you quickly introduce yourself, man? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, so everyone, hope you're well. So my name is Ben Gledhill. I'm head of resourcing for Thames Water, which is quite cool being a northerner, running a southern resource function. But anyway, previous lives have included head of resourcing at Yodel, TA manager at Sophology, working at Manmet Union before that, did my service at Alexander Mann. So yeah, been around a bit.
Amazing, and that's great experience. Typical, all of those sound like high volume style scenarios, right? So you're not like cherry picking your data scientist here.
It's
like loads of people coming in.
Probably
okay,
not.
Cool. We've got Claire waiting to join us, and hopefully she'll get there with us. Yelma, how are you doing? I've been calling you Jerome.
That's all right.
A couple of times. I don't know why that is. I don't even
know.
Jerome. So Yelma, good to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself? Who you are? What it is you do?
Sure. I run a company with another guy named Yelma, so we have the same first name. We run a company called Roadtrip, where we help companies get more value from their online recruitment. And my background is more in software development and digital marketing. I kind of rolled into recruitment, I think, 3.5 years ago, a little bit by accident, but I've been loving the time since then.
And it's always great to see people from different disciplines coming into the industry, because you're bringing in like a completely different skill set and perspective. I've already learned a huge amount about things of on the technical marketing side from you guys. So fantastic to have you join us. And I think you've got some recent consultancy experience on high volume side, which is going to be interesting for us to explore. And we have Claire Bush as well. Claire, how are you doing?
I'm really good. How are you guys doing?
Very good, and good to see you. Claire, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm Claire Bush. I'm Marketing Director over at PH Creative, an employer brand agency. Lovely to see you.
And PH have got some great experience also for companies that are handling this high volume. So let's just go straight into it. Go ahead, Adam, you about to say something?
I just want to quickly ask Yelmer. Yelmer, I've met you and I've met Yelmer. So two Yelmers. Is Yelmer basically the Dave of the Netherlands?
No.
Is it Dave or like John or something like that? I've not actually met that many other Yelmers.
It's actually not. No, it's a name from one of the, it's a Frisian name, so one of the counties we have in the Netherlands. So it's actually quite uncommon. So I think we just got lucky that we have the same first name.
Yeah, it would be like having two Anguses or something in the same company in the UK is what I would be like.
Yeah.
On that note,
Yelmer, was there never a temptation to call your business,
Yelmer?
we are starting to hire our first employee, which we are attempting to restrict to only first name Yelmers.
I would want to see you hire only Yelmers.
Like exactly.
That should be the knockout question. Is your first name Yelmer?
Just so much discrimination. That's ridiculous.
All right, let's get on with this, folks. Let's talk about high volume hiring. We want to put something in between the advert and the inbox. What do we do with that? We've already seen the extraordinary sort of stats by Saurabh there. He's in India hiring for a NOC engineer. He's saying, look, my inbox was destroyed. 4,407 in unread emails. That's not uncommon if you just leave your inbox exposed like that. So let's go with you first. Ben, what are your thoughts on handling this situation? What have you learned in your sort of multiple stops in these big companies that you've got to do if you're handling high volume?
Yeah, it's been a fun one, really. So I think the first thing that you need to kind of probably admit is you're always going to get high volume in certain roles. It's just nature of the beast. If you look at the way that the world is heading, more people need high turnover, more volume, quick kind of accessible work. I guess the two things that's really helped me, and I guess I did my apprenticeship at Sophology and really honed the skills at Yodel, is the first thing is you need to be really honest about who you are and what you want, even if it will turn people off. I think it was obviously Claire's here, so she can probably back me up on this, but I think it was either Google Dave or Brian Adams said a good employer brand will actually turn people away as well as attract them. And that is exactly what we did with our high volume role. So for example, we were recruiting pickers, packers, sorters, couriers, delivery drivers. But we were pretty brutally honest about the role, i.e. this is what you're going to be doing. This is what the work involves. These are the hours. This is what you get paid. And, you know, let's be honest with you, it might not suit everybody. So we were really honest with the type of role that it involved. And I think in today's market, in today's world, whereby people haven't got that much time, it's really good in terms of kind of experience. There, I've got it in. We'll be talking for a minute, but there you go. Kind of experience to be really upfront with what you want to kind of set the kind of boundaries. So I think that's the first thing. And I think you'll do that through really good content. User generated is really, really good. So people actually, hi, I'm X, I'm doing the role. This is what it involves. There's no corporate spiel, etc. And I think the second one is obviously, you know, we do this quite well, is I think you said this, Hung, you need something between application and either screening or assessment that, without being rude, really cuts down the numbers. Because again, you know, without being mean, there will be people that scattergun apply for roles. It's 2020, 2021, it's life. So we use chatbot technology to pre-screen all our candidates. And without asking the classics, like, you know, tell me about the time when you were a good leader, tell me about the time that you saved a sharp on burning building, or whatever the kind of competency questions were. We literally said, so this is the parcels that you're going to be delivering. This is a van that you're going to be driving. Are you okay to handle, say, ammunition? Are you okay to handle, say, fresh meat? Are you okay to deliver parcels when it's minus 10, it's raining, the traffic's horrible? All these things that make up the role. And again, what that does is you're giving everybody really good bits of information, a real good experience. And again, you are asking people to sift them out. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I actually think you'll get more positive reputation for your brand, both corporate and employer, if you're that honest. Because the last thing that you want somebody to do is accept a job as a courier thinking that they're going to be driving the space shuttle, because they're not. It's a tough job. There's a lot to do. And it can be really, really grim sometimes. So, yeah, I think, you know, be honest. Be genuine, be authentic and transparent. I know they're buzzwords, I do apologize. And use technology. You know, I think technology is a great sifter. And I think it can do a lot. And what we found is, I think from the application process pre-chatbot was, I think it was 8% conversion. Afterwards, it was 42 or 43. I can't remember. It's been a lot's happened since then. So your conversions go through the roof. And your performance in role also goes through the roof, because they know what they're going to be doing. You know, right. I'm going to be a delivery driver. So I think for me, it's a strong brand that pushes pull, but use technology to sift out people, really.
All right. Let me just summarize real quick, Ben, because you said so many good things there. And I know there's people making notes, you know, whenever we do Brain Food Live, it's like people scribbling away always. It's like great content. It is great content, folks. Bullet point number one is that you've got to provide a way for the candidates to self-select out. So in other words, all of the, you know, EB, talent attraction generally, has always had the default mindset of just trying to bring people in, like constantly, you know, let's put the gravitational pull that way. But at the same time, you might be pulling in the wrong type of person that isn't suitable for that role. So give them the information to self-select out. And I think that's just a very important value system to know, because go ahead, Ben.
Now, I was going to say that the other thing that I was going to say was, and again, I'm preaching to convertant, but if you do use technology, you've got to make it accessible to your audience. So our application and chatbot technology was accessible on Android, Google, iPhone, or whatever kind of tablet you were using. Because again, I think Adam, you've mentioned this before, is it's all right you're investing in cool, sexy bits of tech, but if your audience can't use it on the tube, on the train, in the queue at Greg's, or in the queue at Asda, it ain't going to happen. So it's make sure that your tech is really accessible as well.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead, Adam.
There's an addition to that, which is, and I've brought this up a couple of times, is you need to make sure that it's accessible to people in ways that doesn't discriminate. So people in poverty are not going to be able, they're not going to have a Mac probably, you know, to access it on. So it's got to be done with low bandwidth and, you know, maybe not necessarily the fanciest, newest piece of kit, because people won't always have access to that.
Yeah. And that's a really important point. This is the last thing that I'll say because I'm even boring myself in my own voice now. But it's interesting. We actually tested how much data it would use just to make sure that it wasn't hammering people's 4G or 3G or whatever. So, yeah, no, that's a valid point now.
And basically, it lends itself a lot to mobile, doesn't it? I mean, ultimately, perhaps if you're dealing with high volume, one of the first things to think about is you got to have a solution that is optimized first for mobile, because rather than the desktop, which is the normal thing. And in fact, Hootsuite have come out with their 2021 annual report. Again, you can expect the same thing: increased use of mobile access to all web applications and all web experiences, decrease of laptop, that desktop by a similar number. So the world is heading towards this is your primary device. Okay, let's go to
just really quickly want to focus on just one other thing that that Ben said, which was about, this is the first time this has ever happened to me. It's literally just gone in my head.
Sorry, is literally
brain,
frozen.
Brain food, brain freeze. Sorry, I'll come back to it.
Yeah, no worries. don't worry. Okay, let's move to you, Yelma, because when we started talking, I think it was through a LinkedIn type of conversation I started, and you said, yeah, with some really interesting things going on. I'd be very curious to know what your recent sort of experience is with dealing with high volume, particularly when I assume you encountered a customer that had a problem and you had to go and support that with your agency.
Yeah, it was. No, we work for a Dutch scale up, which like grows quickly, extremely quickly. So there is a balance between being overloaded with applicants and actually needing a lot of applicants, because they just grow so extremely quickly that they need many applicants. So they do shoppers and runners, or people in warehouses and people delivering groceries, basically. So they need a lot of applicants, but they also want great applicants. So their brand is really on key, like on point. So they want, for example, if you deliver groceries, that you are at least somewhat representable of the company. So we can't just hire anyone. And we don't want to grow our recruitment team linear to our kind of need of applicants or need of hires. So the solution, or actually the problem, was how can we grow without kind of losing quality and without growing our team extremely greatly. So we kind of did a number of things. We tried to at least get as many control as possible. So we've built our own career site, and then we connected it to our ATS. And what we tried to do was kind of make sure that when applicants landed at a recruiter, they were already screened for as far as we can do with technology. So people can always lie, right? So we ask, do you have a license, your driver's license? And if you want to lie, for sure you can do. You can do the same if you talk to someone on the phone. So there's not always like 100% filtering, but what we try to do is kind of break up the selection process in a number of steps so that we then also increase conversion. So there's like this fine balance between how do we maximize conversion, which is generally by asking less questions, and how do we make sure that we still get the quality that we need, which is, of course, always also better possible when you know more about a candidate. So this balance between asking more and less questions is a very practical kind of thing that we had to figure out. So what we did is basically chop up those questions in a number of different stages. So we start on the website with the most kind of knockoff questions. So for drivers, they need a driver's license. If you don't have one, doesn't make sense to apply. So we try to make sure that we have a very low threshold on the website, and they go into our ATS, and our ATS kind of has an enrichment stage. We call it basically enriching candidates by asking them more questions about who they are, what they're motivated by, what they're and availability is, and you are able to kind of drop off anywhere in the process. So if you don't want to finish it at that moment, so you apply and you don't want to fill in all the other questions, you're more than welcome to kind of drop off, and we'll send you reminders through like either text or email so that gets you back in your process. So that helps us with getting enough applicants in, but also making sure that they have the right quality and without overloading our recruitment team.
That's actually a really important point. So basically, the person can abandon or suspend their application but return to it in the same spot. So that would actually be a way to control the flow, wouldn't it? Because you know, you don't want to force people to have to complete on a single session But it actually benefits both sides if the person can return to it when they're next looking at it.
Exactly. So and we then try to do like as much automation as we can. So you can schedule yourself for a screening call. Like there's no recruitment involved. There's no recruiter involved up until the moment there's a screening call. And then basically we already know that people are kind of equipped to do the job. So it helps us to scale our employment force without kind of linearly grow our recruitment teams.
Okay, so this is interesting. Both you and Ben have used examples that of delivery and warehousing logistics workers and so on, where there doesn't seem to be a need for a resume or a CV application, which I totally get and understand. I wanted to just jump to Claire now to see whether is there a difference? Like if there is a person that, you know, there's a CV involved, does that like put a massive spanner in the works from the examples that we've heard from Ben and Yama?
I don't think it does. I think it's about applying similar sorts of technology that both Ben and Yelmer have talked about. For me, and I suppose from our perspective, it starts right back at the point that Ben raised, which is what's your strategy over your recruitment and talent attraction campaigns? You know, are you going to be aware of what's going to come down the line, or are you literally just knee-jerk reaction, you know, kind of jumping because the board have said we need another 200 heads next week? It's all about the timing. And I think depending on what size of team you've got, what budget you've got, what are your real drivers for increasing your headcount at that level? Like all of that needs to be planned, and someone will know about that months, if not years in advance. So it's about being part of that communications chain and knowing and understanding from the hiring managers what's going to work in those situations. You're looking at people any which way right now. Hiring people, whether they've got CVs or not, is a experience kind of task. You have to do it with the best kind of care, due diligence, and yeah, automation is great. It's an enabler, but it's people dealing with people. So we can't forget that.
The I'm just coming up with a general idea here, but both sort of Ben and Yama have talked about scale up situations. Claire, you've just introduced the idea of the strategy being in place. Again, I think that's an organization that knows or anticipates that there's going to be this huge spike. But I keep going back to our man Saurabh there, who looks like he's just innocently posted one job. That was totally a rational thing a recruiter might do, is post a job on LinkedIn. That's not like a problem, but he's been overwhelmed. But it may be that he can't predict that, or he's got a situation that was unusual. And in fact, with COVID-19, that has created a huge change in terms of the applicant flow generally. So jobs that previously you may predict was 100, you can handle that with the team, suddenly now is 1,000, you can't handle that. So has anybody got any experience or any ideas of what to do when there wasn't a strategy and you just like, you're hammered? You've got all these existing jobs out, it's just spike times 10. It's like, how do you control that?
I think for me, it's probably about putting the kind of job itself and who you want in those roles kind of into the full box. It's really simple. Like, have they got everything that you've asked for? Do they know the realities of what the job is going to be? Do they match that in terms of their ambition, their kind of the language that they use, the content that they're responding to? And then can you talk to them? Can you engage them? What method of communications have you got at your fingertips that can give them that response, or at least take them to the next stage where you can be a bit more personable and manage that communication further?
Any other thoughts, folks?
Ben, you're on mute.
There's going to be.
Used to being on mute during the day. It's almost like a thing. But now I was going to say, and I think as always, I'm always a big one for not pinching other people's words. But I think it was Stu Jones, a pal of mine on LinkedIn, that says, the art of recruitment is to be really, really good at rejection. And kind of just going on Claire's kind of words there, I think, life is good and bad, you win or lose. Nobody will have a problem being rejected if you do it in a respectful way. So say, for example, Sarah, a NOC engineer, God, it's been a few years since I recruited them, if you create a funnel process that, you know, rejects people for the right reasons, people will have no problem with that, because that's the circle of life. I think one of the problems that we have now is, and again, you know, it's probably a terminal problem with resourcing and TA, is we cast the net out so wide, we catch so many fish that we don't need. And that's why I hate to say it, that fish get annoyed with us as fisher people. I don't know if that's a really good phrase, but anyway, I'll use it. So, yeah, I think we need to tighten the parameters, like Claire said, in terms of be very, very clear what we're looking for. And do you know what? If we attract a lot of people, that's the modern world. There's nothing that we can do about it, I guess.
There's an interesting angle here, isn't there, about sort of equity, diversity and stuff like this as well, because we've seen criticisms like in an unrelated sense about irrational requirements in the job advert. Like, for instance, why do you actually need a certain educational standard when it doesn't map to the requirements of the job? And of course it doesn't, but I think it was always there to try and suppress the volume. It was an artificial barrier in order, because I can't handle all of these people coming in, or the guy needs to have a 2-1 or whatever. And then, you know, you control applicant flow. So there's a tension there, isn't there? Because we want to be open and fair and have the job to say this is open to anybody. We're not going to put artificial things that don't make, that aren't mapped to the job. But that may suddenly create a big net. Is this a solvable problem? What are your thoughts on this?
I think it is, absolutely. It's drilling back to the EVP. It's the employer brand right at the heart of the matter. You know, we talk about the give and get, which Ben was talking about. It's about being totally transparent with what it's really like within the culture of the business, being able to use the words that every employee would automatically say that culture is actually really like. It's about showing people what it takes to thrive in an environment like that. And to Ben's point, there aren't, you know, it's not going to be suitable for everybody. There's and even my own kind of onboarding experience with PH, you know, everybody was very clear about what I need to give and what I'll get back from being part of this organization. There are some serious harsh realities about even working in probably the most happiest place on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's a lot of hard work, there's tenacity that's needed, but there's also that great reward in seeing everybody succeed and also our clients really thriving as well because of the work that we do. So I think, in a nutshell, go right back to the employer brand. Go literally interrogate it. What are the harsh realities, but what are the real plus points? And get that brought to life by the people who work there and their experience. And then you can use that through the content as a natural filter. So to your point, hung around diversity, equity, inclusion, I think content that's curated from a hiring manager through a recruiter, through the recruitment process, has much more of an ability to naturally attract the few people who are going to succeed through the recruitment process. And it will repel all of those that think, oh, there's another job, it's a developer, I can do that, without actually reading what kind of development role it is or where it's going to be situated or what kind of output's needed, et cetera. So, yeah, I think you've got to be able to look at the entire process. What are you really looking for? Who do you really want to attract? And what can you do within the content to repel the many?
Yeah, no worries. And Ben, you got to go. No worries, mate. You have a good day. Thanks for your contribution, dude. All right, cool. I was meaning to get rid of him since he came on, so brilliant. No, only joking. This is like a really fascinating thing because I can see us kind of edging towards some really important ethical conversations also, right? So part of what I wanted to on your point, Claire, would it make sense to say something like harsh realities of the job, like right at the beginning of your advert, which I think probably would make sense, right? Yep. But then you can also imagine a situation where that would come under criticism, because people would then say, oh, you have this like terrible working culture, or this is not accessible to this person. Like, for instance, today, I mean, Goldman Sachs is a good example, right? They've been hammered over the last month or so with the CEO saying, hey, listen, remote is a fad, you're back in the office. Then, of course, this week we have sort of an internal report that's been leaked about the amount of hours that junior staff kind of have to go through. They're actually, the staff are actually arguing that, hey, I think it would be sensible if we had a maximum of 80-hour weeks, right? They're arguing for that we have for 80 hours. And it's like, because it's ridiculously work hard scenario. 9 to 5 is like 9 to 5 in the morning, so this type of stuff. So, all right, that's the reality of it. So if they went out with that philosophy and said, look, I'm going to show you what it's like, it's really hard, then obviously that's going to attract all kinds of opprobrium. And if they're not able to change their culture, which of course, yes, magic wand people, we're going to change that culture, but probably not immediately, they are likely not to be able to advertise with that degree of honesty. They'll have to couch it in euphemism, saying we're a work hard, play hard culture. So I think there's a lot of interesting, I don't think we'll solve it in this call, but there's a lot of interesting sort of conversations to be had in terms of the ethics of this, the ethics of honesty even. Like, can you, does it make sense to be honest? Yes, it does. Intuitively, we all believe that, but it may be impossible to do for many situations. There was one very interesting thing I wanted to talk on a technical side, which Yelma, I don't want to put you on the spot with this, but we've talked about the candidate reciprocity. There's a couple of people on the chat stream saying, yes, you want to give good candidate experience to people, but we also have a bunch of people that just spam away. So in other words, Claire, they're not paying attention to your message at all. They just say, right, apply, 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 apply. Now, those people, I think, need to be treated differently because they're going to burn your time, and the chances of them being relevant or connected to the job or good performers, et cetera, are going to be quite low. I wonder whether there's a way to track how long this person has spent on site, Yelma, and segment that way. Is it even fair to do that? So in other words, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's fair to do so. I think there's like there are so many circumstances that you can apply in. I don't think you can track time on site. That's no problem. But I think the point that Adam was making earlier is a very valid one, is you want to make it so technically that people can segment their way out. So if you aren't really kind of enthusiastic about the role and you're just kind of applying to like tens of roles at a time, you probably won't be very much motivated to go into this selection process. So what we do for the company I work for is we try to kind of motivate candidates to enrich themselves. And if you aren't really motivated, there's a lower chance, or at least this is my just very much common sense thinking, there's a lower chance that you're going to finish the complete application. And if you don't, that's fine. We got you in the system. And if we need, for a specific location, need a lot of drivers, we can always kind of email you and ask you, hey, are you so interested, or did you find a new job? And we can do that. But as a whole, I would say that by giving people the option to actually forcing them, not even giving them the option, forcing them to go to the selection themselves, you're filtering out people that are less motivated. And you don't want to make this too tricky, right? The sense that the more tricky we make an application process, the more motivated people we get is also kind of an outdated one. So there's a balance between making sure it's a little bit tricky and we don't want to get everyone in. And you can do that by segmenting your application process, I believe, by starting really simple and getting people in the system and then enriching them throughout automated steps where they can make sure that they get better and get their candidate profile better enriched.
There's an old story, isn't there, about the NET-A-PORTER kind of packaging job. I don't know if anybody else is familiar with that, but the application process to work at NET-A-PORTER when it first launched was just insane. Like, the application process was like, I don't know, say 10, 15 different steps. And the reason being was that actually the job of the packager was all about the attention to detail and all about the way that you fold the paper and the stickers that you put on and the tissue paper and wrapping and the clothes and garments and all of that being handled with care. So they were trying to replicate the type of people that would succeed in the job through the application and use the application as a natural filter. And I think that's a really great way of doing it. I'm not sure whether or not, again, that sort of level of transparency needs to be brought up front. So to your point, Hung, if you are going to be filtering through a job application process, then let the candidate know so that their experience expectations are set from the get-go. And I think if you are going to put, you know, the real harsh realities or the truth of what it's like as the culture up there. It has to be something that resonates back with the people who actually work there, and they can verify that. And things and tools like, you know, your Glassdoor score or any kind of CMPS tools that are out there which verify the culture or verify the actual reality of that company, again, can be used as part of the campaign or part of the process to naturally filter.
So there's another thing that's worth talking about, isn't it? Like the what's it called? Employee generated content, right? So we have user generated content. Oh, well and good, we know that term. But employee generated content is the stuff that's coming from the person doing the job or the hiring managers in there. It's not filtered by marketing. It's not filtered by recruiting. So the agenda is out of there. It's just literally somebody talking about what they're doing. And in doing so, again, people might just be enlightened a little bit more as to what the conditions actually are. And it doesn't have to be a horror story. It's just the reality of it. You know, upon occasion, this is what you got to do. So, you know, I used to want to be a zookeeper, for instance. I love animals.
You doing that, hon?
I did. I wanted to be a zookeeper. We're talking like a five-year-old boy here. But anyway, I want to be a zookeeper. Then, of course, it's like you're going to be shoveling crap most of the day. You're not going to be riding in the elephant and petting the panda. No, you'll be shoveling crap. So all of that stuff is super interesting. Okay, cool. Listen, Saurabh's been really cool here because he's invited, like he's basically talked a lot about the technical side of it. I wonder whether we might just break the process a little bit and bring Saurabh on, because I want to just investigate from an operating recruiter's point of view in a different cultural context where the applicant rate is just consistently high. So it's a persistent issue, I believe, in India, whether that's the case. Saurabh, I'm going to invite you on screen. I hope you're sensibly dressed for work, sir. May not be. He's quite late over there. Who knows?
I just want to quickly, while we're doing that, make
one. You can say no, by the way. You can say no, Saurabh. Don't worry. But come on if you can. Go ahead, Adam.
Both Hjalmar and Ben talked about productivity and about how do you scale the amount of candidates that you can get through without scaling your
team,
recruitment team, kind of index linked. And it's all marketing and experience design and technology.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And it's you get that right, recruitment teams can do much, much more.
Yeah, you need to buy tech, don't you? And we'll talk about that in a bit. Saurabh, if you can come on, please say yes. Don't worry about general. Well, actually, do worry about your appearance just a little bit. make sure you got clothes on. It's about 10 o'clock in the evening in India, I think. I don't know.
No, it's not that late.
No.
There he is. Saurabh, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good morning. Very good. Yeah. Good. Thank you so much, by the way, for just jumping in. It was not part of the plan, but you were just commenting so much like interesting stuff. I just thought, let's get this guy on because you're operating recruiter that has to handle it. So you don't have like the support of all of this, you know, other assets. You don't have the strategy at company level. It's like you just an operating recruiter having to deal with it. Tell us how you're dealing with like 5,000 applications for a job, man. Like, what are you doing?
Okay, so initially I start with the one thing. I just take out all the resume from the inbox, which I use the tool extract Outlook data. Then I put it in the one folder and upload into ATS. Then again, I put my string on the ATS, which is filter out all the resume, and I get all the resume which is I'm looking forward. Then I connect those candidate line up for the interview, and we're able to close 8 position. And the rest, I again download the whole data in Excel sheet and mail merge and send it the feedback that your resume is not shortlisted. This is the reason. This is how I'm able to manage. But next time, I'm not able to prepare for this kind of
I love the emergency fix. I love it, Saurabh. So you have to basically have some skills to do some data manipulation, basically. And that's an underrated skill. A lot of recruiters don't have that, particularly phone-based recruiters that have traditionally, you know, been sales-based.
Yeah.
But your ability to use some basic stuff with Excel, with VBA, just to manipulate the spreadsheet is really going to help you out, because you can't possibly manually do row by row on this stuff. That is not possible. Okay, Saurabh, tell me about sort of posting this job out on LinkedIn. I mean, why did you do that? Did you anticipate some results, or did it just like, were you surprised, I guess, by this response?
honestly, I never received such huge number of resume. I hardly received, like, you know, sometime max 100 resume. I never thought I'm going to receive, you know, 4,000 resume by 3 days. In the end of the day, I have to delete that entire post. Yeah. So this is how, like, you know, I manage now.
Yeah. Here's what I think is super, Arman, I'll come to you in a sec. What I think is interesting is because the world has changed in this way. Lots more job insecurity in many, many places. Work from remote obviously increases the overall candidate pool. If you're posting a job and you have a work from anywhere policy, by the way, you don't have a choice. If the company sets a work from anywhere policy in your business, you can't necessarily say, oh, I'm only looking at people in London. You have to say work from anywhere. That's probably a rule in your business, in which case you can expect 5,000 resumes or a times X response. So we need to have equipment and solutions to fix that. Let's talk about that, folks, because we've only got 5 minutes left. Saurabh, you kind of hacked together your own way to do it. We've talked to Claire and Yelmer and Ben about having a strategy and a structure. Let's talk about what needs to happen sort of going forward. You're talking to a company, we can anticipate spike in applicant flow. What sort of technologies in particular we need to be deploying there? Let's go to everyone on this, but start with you, Adam, because I know you want to say something here.
What I was going to say wasn't quite that question, but I will quickly say what I was going to say, which was Saurabh's been a victim of his own success there. And, you know, there's a real problem if you're advertising or you're doing talent attraction things and you're not getting enough candidates who could do the job. But it's almost as much of a problem if you're not prepared for huge volumes, if you get too many people responding. So you can be a victim of your own success. And it's long actually been a problem in recruitment for probably 10 years since job boards started to become really important. On the question that you just asked, linking back to something earlier, you know, how could you be prepared if you don't realize you're going to get massive numbers of people? I think you've got to segment your roles around who is the in-demand talent, where I've got a roll out the red carpet to get three people to come and, you know, say yes, they're interested in coming for an interview or even just having a conversation. That's a different way of doing things. When you know you've got large volumes and you may be deluged, you got to set it up once and then use that process for everything you do from then on. But you got to test different things and see what works, and it's iterative, right? So, you know, what worked a year ago is going to be slightly different this year probably.
And also on that note, you obviously don't default to advertising everything if you can avoid it, right? So suddenly advertising may become like a deterrent for recruiters because you have this ridiculous demand that actually causes you a huge amount of work. So again, we have to look at where it is in terms of legislation, because different countries and different territories might oblige you to advertise a job in order to say you've been, you haven't sort of you made it accessible. I think government and public sector is particularly this way. But I also am aware that to avoid this, sometimes you put a fake job out or a job that is not authentic in order, because you know you're going to headhunt the job. So you put something out there that you know is not going to get anybody. People used to do this when I serviced the NHS back in my agency days. When I was the preferred supplier to this hiring manager, he knew I would deliver the people he needed, but he had to advertise it. And he definitely created a job that no one was ever going to apply for. So he created an anti-advert, which obviously is a not great solution to this situation. But you get what I mean. Okay, let's move on. Claire, what is the setup companies generally need to handle unexpected sort of flow?
I think I'd always go back to the experience. So Adam mentioned it right at the beginning, experience by design. You've got to map, whether that's through, you know, kind of putting a lucid chart together or just working through what stages, what steps, and at the same time as doing the kind of step-by-step experience, think about what kind of technology you need in there to enable that experience to actually happen. Because with best will in the world, I love Excel too. And I have nightmares about mail merging through Word. But, you know, those kind of tools are great for the small kind of stuff. But you can have really, really great tools, next to nothing costs, that can now be purpose-built to handle volume and communications and help with your engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's going to be, it's an exciting sort of segment to get involved in. The decision-making for those tools, though, is going to be at a higher level than operation recruiters. And I think a part of the disconnect is that. It's like sometimes the people at the top are not that aware as to what's happening at the local level, or if you've got decentralized, delegated recruiting happening at the operator level. Okay, let's go to you finally, Yelma. Thoughts on technology that you would say this is a good thing to try and implement if you're trying to control applicant flow?
Yeah, I think understanding where you are, so like knowing what comes in and what is processed, and I think technology is always a means to an end. So you want to have make sure that you know your processes and that the processes are in place, but also that you know that your processes are working. So make sure that you can track what happens on either your career side or your ATS or a combination of both or in your CRM. So I think knowing what happens will be nice.
Yep. Okay, we've got some good chat on the chat stream there, but I've realized the time also, we're running out. We've got two questions we want to deal with. So let's go to the questions, folks. This one here from Pedro. Pedro saying, do you think that TA team should be centralized and use one pipeline to hire multiple areas in a company, or should TA teams be divided by business units and don't share a pipeline? So I think the idea is, look, maybe one of the ways that we need to deal with it is the internal structure of the talent acquisition function. Thoughts on this? Very quickly, let's go around. Adam, your thoughts?
Well, 100% they need to be using one talent pipeline, but it's got to be segmented in a way whereby you can get to the people in certain regions, you can get to them in certain skill sets, and ideally it's dynamic. So it's updating all the time without humans having to do things based on candidates' interactions or otherwise with your content.
Okay, cool. No worries. I've realized time is going to stop us from going around, Robin. So I'm going to go to the second question. Sorry, folks. This one's from Quinton Cowdery. Quinton's just said, in the modern recruitment landscape, it's not typical volume roles that receive a very large number of applicants. It also regularly happens to senior specialized roles. In this case, should employers employ some sort of techniques we've been discussing? I'm actually not sure what the question, what Quinton's referring to here. It's not just typical volume roles. Okay, I get it. So in other words, he's saying, you know what, it's not just van drivers, but we're seeing a spike in sort of applicants for any kind of role.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's easier to apply, right? Every candidate, there's even tools to help candidates do this. Even going further forward, you can imagine that technologies like, you know, GDP3, for instance, is going to make it easier for applicants to be, you can use automated applications. So this is just going to increase. So the question is, should employers use some of the techniques we've been discussing? I guess the answer is yes to that, if I can answer the question. But how do we deal with increasing automation from the candidate side? Maybe a good way to look at this one. Thoughts, anybody?
I think it's a super interesting aspect. It's not something I've experimented with before, but I think there are generally very good practices that we can take from high volume hiring that we can apply to high skill hiring. And it also probably would benefit the candidate. So I think definitely, yeah, let's go for it.
I think on this, there are lessons to be learned, aren't there? So look at companies that have historically had this high volume and then think about lessons we can learn, the Amazons of this world, or, you know, the businesses that have this huge spike, seasonal hiring and so on, what can we employ? Oftentimes the use of technology, transparency of process, the honesty in terms of what the job is, to provide self-selection out, there's things that probably could go into any role rather than just the high volume stuff. Okay, folks, we're out of time, so we're going to have to end it there. Claire, you about to say something? Or?
Yeah, I was just going to end that one. You just mentioned Hung. So the Give and Get Employer Brand Philosophy, it's in a book. Brian and Dave wrote Goosebumps. This is the second version of our philosophy kind of out there. It's from Brian Adams and Charlotte Marshall. Charlotte's a world-renowned employer brand specialist, so it's really worth getting a copy. If you want a copy, drop me a note. If it's okay with you, Hung, I'll stick my email in the chat.
Stick the link to the book in the chat. That's totally fine. That's awesome. Okay, everybody, thank you for your time, folks. Ben, thank you for joining us in your working day. Yelma, thank you for being with us, man. Great to see you again. Sarah, thank you in particular for jumping in like in the middle of your work day. So I hope you have a very good evening, sir. And Claire, thank you very much for joining us also. We'll see you soon. I think you're back in a couple of weeks, actually, Claire. So I will make sure I will message you on that. Okay, that's it, everybody. Really interesting show. Probably more to talk about, really. Particularly the sort of the technical aspects. If I was going to set it up from scratch, what does that look like, you know? What sort of technologies? We didn't quite talk about the I would be happy to talk about the vendors that you need to be using here, because I'm sure the audience would be interested to know, all right, that's all well and good talking about categories, but what the hell do I buy, you know? Couple of quick things before everyone goes. I think you need to have a chatbot, in my opinion, at the very least an online form. You can do that on Typeform or Google Forms, but definitely upgrade that at some point to something that can interact, so that the candidate can extract information when they want to. And that may, again, allow for self-selection out rather than them just wasting time going through a process and then inadvertently wasting your time. I would say an interview scheduler would be useful. Use a tool that's going to help, take that away from your recruiting team. Candidates can manage their own interview slots. You just got to provide the right sort of diary for them. There's also tools that allow for transparency where you can check up on your application, right? So, where candidates is self-served essentially, where the candidate wants to avoid the black hole experience, but, give them the opportunity to check it, rather than having to call in and say, what's happened to my application? Anyway, loads of talk.
Fill in your email address, and then the next step will be through activated by them opening the email. That'll get rid of a whole load of people who decide that they're actually not that interested.
Good point, to track the email, right? So, yeah.
The thing where I got brain freeze earlier, the thing I was going to say was actually about what Ben said around, all the large numbers of people who just apply for 50 jobs a day, that kind of thing. It's like almost when you're filling in a form on something and it asks you like select all the boxes that have got a bus in it or whatever. You do want to make sure that it's real people are actually wanting to apply for that job rather than just for anything.
All right. Let's sit on that for a second. What you're saying is there is a particular type of candidate that basically over-applies because they apply to everything. That's not to say they're bad candidates, but they're probably deploying a bad strategy. And it means that they're getting falsely considered for different types of jobs where they're not suitable or not interested in.
Yeah.
You kind of have I wouldn't say a trick question, but something to pick that up. So it will be a nonsense question or something, and you'll be able to just collect whether that person, how that person answers it or deals with that question will tell you whether they've actually read the question or not.
It's a capture. It's a way of just making sure that this is a real person who's not using any kind of automation to apply for jobs. And also it is actually like, type in the name of the company you're applying to here, type in the name of the job you're applying for here, things like that. Bill Berman did some research with Oleo, ATS business, about 2 years ago, analyzing 9 million, I think, job applicants, and over half of them had learned nothing about the company they were applying for. They'd done no research on the employer brand or on the, what the job was involving or anything like that. You got to get that out without humans having to review any of these people.
100%. And not only this, but some of them will be automated. I mean, a decent software developer can easily write a script to help you apply for jobs. I was about to share something on Brain Food on that, but before I realized, that maybe that's dangerous information, but basically easy to do. And one of the things that we just edged on as we didn't have time was to talk about, the increasing availability of automation means that we can anticipate more of this behavior because we can also understand why candidates would do this because they are currently thinking it's going to maximize my chances and reduce my time. And then they apply the automation stuff in. So interesting ethics. Is it okay for candidates to use automation? That's probably a Brain Food Live in a different episode because we recruiters love automation, right?
It's supply and demand. There's some ways that we can automate the heck out of what the candidates need to do. And then there's other ways we've got to roll out the red carpet. And it's the same for candidates. If they're in high demand, they can do whatever. They can tell you when they're doing the interview.
Exactly. And you know what? That's the practical reality of it. And I don't disagree with the practical reality of this, that we do treat this variance in how we treat candidates based on how hard it is to recruit those candidates. But there is an ethical issue sometimes with this, because suddenly you're thinking, why have you varied your effort to this person when this, there's no reason why that person is any extra deserving. They just like have a particular characteristic or a skill set that is happens to be rarer. No reason why that should necessarily change how you behave as a business. Anyway, let's move on. We've finished the show. Join us next week. We've got another amazing show. It's talent and intelligence, folks, something I know nothing about. I know Adam knows nothing about. but we'll be back with Toby Colshaw over at Amazon. We'll be there with Leticia Mortet at Philips. And we've also got Alison Ettridge running her own consultancy on this topic. What is talent intelligence? Why does it matter? If you want to check that out, make sure you follow the channel, register on the show next week, and we will see you then. Quick final thank you to our sponsors, OcuPop. We talked about technology of some type. Use an ATS. If that's the first, if you haven't got one of these technologies yet and you need to pick one up for the first time, OcuPop may be the right place for you to start. Okay, that's it. We'll see you all next week.